Koreans themselves tell me that they are, as a culture, retiring, and they do not like to be up front. So grab them all after the service and demand that they do it again, okay? Unfortunately, Paul, who led this morning, he and his family are heading back to Korea. So isn't that right, Paul? When are you leaving?
Monday.
Leaving Monday. Will you come back?
Yeah, sure.
After a year?
After a year.
Okay, great. After a year, he's coming back. For the year, we're going to need someone else to lead the Korean group, and we need many others. Arend Vandekirk. Where did Arend go? Went to the children, okay, with the junior church. Arend and Annemiek are also leaving, and Arend has been so faithful to play for the last number of years and lead in worship. So we're going to need more of you involved in the worship services, whether you're Korean or Dutch or American or New Zealand or whatever. We need you. Sudanese, please let us know and get involved. This morning we want to take some time to look at the whole issue of worship. Actually, we're doing it for this week. I'll continue it next week. And then when I come back after vacation, I want to continue again for about 6 weeks to do some teaching on worship. Worship is one of the most important, if not the most important thing that God's people can be involved in. And yet, unfortunately, there's a lot of misunderstanding about worship and a lot of confusion. And quite frankly, there are sometimes a lot of difficulties related to worship. How many of you have ever had a fight, a dispute, a disagreement, or a deep frustration about something that had to do with church? Go ahead, put your hand up. It might be with the person next to you, so you're a little hesitant, but... Okay, let's be honest, folks. The church is not perfect. It's made up of imperfect people. Somebody said, I'm looking for the perfect church. I said to that person one time, I said, if you ever find it, don't join it. You'll wreck it. There's no such thing as a perfect church because it's made up of imperfect people. But we are together as imperfect people worshiping a perfect Lord. That's what draws us together. So as we try to worship God, we do it imperfectly. But nevertheless, it's important for us to examine why the issue of worship is so tense sometimes and builds such difficulties among us. Did you ever realize that the first murder recorded in the Bible was over the issue of style of worship? Did you ever think about it? And it hasn't continued to be abated over the years. A lot of frustration in churches over worship styles. You know, some people can't stand it when we sing old-fashioned hymns. I see it on your face. Other people get really antsy, and you can almost see them clenching their teeth when we sing choruses, especially when we do it over and over again. Well, you're laughing. Yeah, I got your number, don't I? You know, some people want a 10 to 15 minute homily in the context of a 60 minute service, max. While others wish the sermon and the service would go on for hours and get quite frustrated that we're finished before 2 hours. Some people want the communion table in a certain location. Other people just want to hug everybody. The list goes on and on and on. Fights over the way we worship are very similar to the difficulties faced by married couples before they learn that there are different languages of love. Paul this morning led us in a whole bunch of different ways to say hello. All these different languages. Now, if I walked up to you this morning and said to you, in a language you couldn't understand, a message of deep love and passion, you probably would look at me like, where was I coming from? Even though it may be very significant. If you do not know the language in which I speak, you cannot get the message. And many times married couples are like that. They're missing each other. They have different languages of love. They're speaking it, but they're not hearing their partner's expression. Brenda and I were married 2 years when I learned this lesson abruptly, when I completely forgot her birthday. I have since learned there is a guaranteed way, man, there's a guaranteed way how to never, ever, ever forget your wife's birthday. Just forget it once. You'll never do it again, I guarantee. Anyway, I went through that painful experience, and that process helped me understand some of this issue of the language of love. At that point in time, Brenda's language of love was the giving and receiving of gifts. This was very, very important to her. It was her family background. That's how they showed love. Her mom, to this day, always gives a gift. You know, it's not just for Christmas and Easter. Here's a gift because it's Friday. You know, it's Happy Friday. Just it's her way of expressing her love. And so Brenda picked that up, and that's the way she was showing her love in our marriage. On the other hand, I came from a family, we didn't give a lot of gifts, but we were very expression. We did a lot of expression in terms of both verbal and physical love. We were always hugging and kissing and patting each other or slapping each other or wrestling or whatever, and we're always telling each other nice things about each other. That's just what the context I grew up in. So in our marriage, in those first couple of years, Brenda was giving me all these gifts, but what I was longing for was a back rub. I wanted her to say nice things to me. And I was giving her lots of affection and praise and hugs and kisses. But she was looking for the wrapped gift that wasn't coming. We were very well intentioned, but we were like ships passing in the night, not even knowing we were coming by each other. We were missing each other. We were trying hard to love, but feeling like the other person wasn't loving us because they weren't doing it in the right way. Our way. The parallel to worship is profound. Worship is the way we express our love to God. And just as we differ in our languages of love with each other, so we differ in our ways of worship. By understanding each other's focus, we can learn to appreciate different forms of worship, different styles of praise. If we do not understand that, we start to think that others who are different than us aren't really worshiping. At least they're not worshiping the right way like we are. I'd like us this morning to see how different focal prompts from within us yield different forms of praise. I've outlined them in your bulletin, so it's easy to take notes, add a little to it, but I want you to take this home this morning because it's so crucial to understand. Each person who knows God, who has come to know Him through faith in Jesus Christ, has a different instinct of the soul, a different spiritual temperament, a different focus that seems to prompt their worship. Let's examine some of them this morning. First of all, when a person's focal prompt is aesthetics, when they like things done nicely, their form of praise deals with the issue of majesty. These people love tradition, not just because it's tradition. They love tradition because they love beauty. They love order. They love things done well, with finesse, with style, with class. They hunger for artistic integrity. And they have a sense of awe at beautiful form and architecture, especially when it reveals immensity or density. And these people love to live in light of history, and therefore they cherish historical liturgies, creeds, classical music, traditions. When these aesthetics are in order, these people have an awesome sense of God's majesty, and they love to declare it. King David and King Solomon were obviously prompted with a love for aesthetics when they planned and built the awe-inspiring temple in Jerusalem. Go back and read the details of that place. That place was designed specifically to declare the majesty and the glory of God. Every detail, down to the utensils, were cared for exquisitely. Now, if you are prompted by aesthetics, you may have a measure of discomfort in this humble outdoor tent with torn flaps with banner holders that always go crooked. Doesn't that bug you? One's broken. Kind of gets to you, doesn't it? You know, I came up here, I remember last year one time, somebody came up and had a presentation. And when they took it down, right over here there was a piece of tape that was hanging. I came in one Friday and sat there and I looked at that, oh, how ugly. But I got into the service and went on and whatever, and then the service was over and I went back to my, I don't spend a lot of time in here during the week, you know. So came back next Friday, it was still up there. And I was sitting there agitated in my spirit thinking, gotta take that down, gotta take it down. I forgot about it. That went on 4 weeks in a row. Am I the only ascetic person here? Just walk up and peel that thing off sometimes, okay? If you're an ascetic person who loves that kind of thing, those kind of things really bug you. Because something's not in order. It seems to diminish the majesty of God. Now, if that's you this morning, we need you in this church. Please offer your insights, your service, your passion. Get on the worship committee and bring in your taste for excellence. Let's make beautiful banners. Let's adorn this humble tent with more things that bespeak the majesty and glory of God. Amen? Oh, I got a couple of you. Great. Next. When a person's focal prompt is experience, their form of praise deals with the issue of joy. These people hunger for emotional vibrancy, for physical expressions that reflect joy, such as clapping, such as moving or dancing, such as laughing, maybe even shouting, and definitely singing lustily with a loud voice. They love drama. They love theatrical representations of truth. They want to feel God. And so they may sing or pray until they do feel Him. And that may mean repeating a chorus 6 times. Why? Just because they don't know any better? No! They're doing it because they want to feel God. These people cherish spontaneity. And sometimes they believe that this is the only or primary way the Holy Spirit leads. King David also loved to worship this way. And you can read of it throughout the Psalms. In the New Testament, Peter seems to have enjoyed and sought spontaneous bursts of joy as he experienced God in worship. If you are prompted by experience, you may find it difficult to believe that someone who doesn't appear excited, who isn't smiling, who is sitting on their hands, who isn't clapping or dancing, you may find it hard to believe that they might actually be worshiping too. Because for you, joy is the gauge that indicates whether or not you have worshiped. The joy of the Lord is your strength. May your tribe increase. Thirdly, when a person's focal prompt is action, their form of praise deals with achievement. These people experience God most deeply when they are doing something for Him. This often happens in marriages. I know many situations where wives will be so frustrated because their husbands just don't love them. They don't kiss them enough. They don't hug them enough. They don't tell them they love them enough. And when I talk to the men, they say, I don't love her? What do you mean? I'm busting my bones out there doing everything I can to bring home the bacon. I'm working 2 jobs to try and satisfy her desires and satisfy her appetites. What is he? He's out there working to show his love, but she's wanting something else. Why? He's a doer. He expresses his love by action, by achievement. These people who worship this way, who come to worship with that orientation, these people are the kind who get involved in social action, who courageously represent God's truth. They're highly motivated to do something. They're activists. They're like A.B. Simpson, who started a missionary denomination. Or David Livingston, who left all the comforts of home and headed off to Africa as a missionary. Or like Nehemiah, who led the people to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Or like the many women in Armani Women's Guild, who continually serve faithfully, week by week by week, going all over Egypt to these charities, to minister, to care, practically, hands-on, in ways, to wash babies, to go to the orphanages. They're doing something. I had a guy call me 2 weeks ago, just moved into town, found out about our church, called me before he even attended a service to say, Pastor, I'm in town, want to get involved, want to do something. What can I do? Oh, man. I had a whole list. If you are prompted by action, you may be like Martha, wishing Mary would get off her backside and help serve the crowd. You may find it frustrating to watch people trying to worship at church with little involvement beyond this gathering. Because for you, to worship means to do something for God. May your tribe increase. Fourth, when a person's focal prompt is contemplation, their form of praise is hearing. These people long to sit at Jesus' feet like Mary. And quite frankly, they couldn't care less if the dishes aren't done. Their focus is the interior life. They want time for quietness, for centering, for recollection and for meditation. Like Jesus' mother Mary, they treasure these things up in their heart and go over them and over them and over them. Like John the Baptist, they love to get out into the desert. The desert places away from all the distractions, where every busy thing in life is silenced so that they can hear God speak to their soul. If you are prompted by contemplation, you probably find the noisy outdoor atmosphere of our worship setting a bit frustrating. You may find the size of our congregation daunting, and would be quite satisfied if nobody noticed you, because that's not why you're here. You may wish that worship leaders wouldn't talk between the songs, or that we wouldn't sing during communion. You simply want to be still and know that He is God. May your tribe increase. Fifth, when a person's focal prompt is learning, their form of praise deals with truth. They want to know, they want to understand, they want to comprehend. And so they study the Scriptures. They love expository preaching and teaching. They love systematic theology, cognitive truths. And they will actually read and enjoy Calvin's Institutes of Religion. They love doctrine and Bible studies. Like the Bereans in Acts 17:11, they search the Scriptures daily to see if the things being taught are correct. These people can detect false teaching very quickly and will either correct it or they will leave. They're very committed to truth. Now, if you are prompted by learning, you can be frustrated sometimes with some worship courses that are focused more emotionally than theologically. You might prefer hymns or creeds that clearly articulate theological soundness. You can't understand why some people come to worship service but don't stay for Friday school. Because for you, that's the icing on the cake. The chance to get in there and open the Scriptures and ask your questions and deal with the stuff and understand, because that's how you say, Lord, I love You. You want to love Him with all your mind. May your tribe increase. When a person's focal prompt is relating, their form of praise deals with love. They meet God in community, doing things with others and for others. They love to sit in circles instead of rows. They love to talk. They love to touch. They love to give and receive hugs. They love to give and receive encouragement. They want to be noticed. They want to be talked to. They long to be included. They think holding hands together in prayer really binds us together. Like Barnabas in the book of Acts, they watch out for people like John Mark who had blown it, and they reach out and draw him back into the fellowship. Now, if you are prompted by relating, you may find the size of our congregation rather difficult. You may leave here after a service saying, you know what, that church is really unfriendly. Why? Because nobody came and engaged you in significant discussion. No one zeroed in on you. No one made you a priority. For you, dear friends, being part of a cell group is not a luxury. It's an absolute necessity. If you haven't gotten involved in a cell group yet,